You better come on in my kitchen. There's far to be raining out door.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Hope you've had a nice weekend, enjoyed your farmers markets, enjoyed the mild weather. I love this drop in temperature. It just seems so perfect, a light breeze. So I've been loving it. Hope you have been too. I'm really excited about tonight's guests and tonight's topic, something I've wanted to do for a long time. And it's an event that always sneaks up on me, and I think, oh, I have to do this next year. And so now it's next year. And I am talking about, I believe it is the 57th annual Chicken Teriyaki Barbecue and Bazaar that takes place in Sebastopol at Edmonji Temple. 57 years of an event, continuous event going on in Sebastopol. I just think that is really marvelous. And to talk about it, I have with us Reverend Carol Hamaka, of the temple, and also we have Martin Shimizu. You have been with the temple since it was first built, is that right?
Yes, since I was
a little tiny little boy.
Three and a half.
Oh gosh, that's great.
And the dedication in 1934.
That's great. Well, thank you both for taking time on a Sunday evening.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk first a little bit about the history of the event. Then we'll go back into some of the history of the temple itself, which I know is really interesting. What do we know about how it started, why it started, what it was like early on?
Well, mainly, I think some of our, I guess they were like our founding fathers for the temple. They figured that we needed to generate more income rather than taxing our general membership.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up with this barbecue idea. And it just blossomed. And we were the first ones in the whole, I don't know whether it's in the state or not, that did teriyaki chicken barbecue.
Mm-hmm. And I assume it didn't. I mean, how many do you serve right now? Do we know how many
people? Right now, we serve roughly 4,000.
4,000.
And at the peak, we used to do about 6,000.
Oh, really? Oh.
But then over the years, other organizations have started to do barbecues in various locations in the county. Uh-huh. And so 4,000 is basically our plateau.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. And I've always understood that people come really from all over the Bay Area.
Pretty much.
And is it sort of the Japanese community from the Bay Area that comes?
Yeah, from the Bay Area, mostly from the Japanese community.
Mm-hmm.
But we get a lot of support from our local.
Oh, yes. I see everybody I know whenever I go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely a very popular event among people in Sebastopol, and I think Sonoma County in general. People love it.
Yes.
And what was it like in the earlier years before it grew to so many?
When we first started the barbecue, the pit used to be located right there next to the temple, between the temple and the existing hall.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And because we didn't have that much space at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And over a period of years, you know, we got by. But then it got to where we purchased 1 acre next to our property.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the ladies that were on the serving line, which was always on the smoky side of the pit.
Oh, that would be hard.
They said they would like to move.
Yeah, I can understand that.
So we moved the pit onto the lot next door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then let's see if I have it right. You get half a chicken, rice.
Potato salad.
Yes.
Pickle chips.
That's right.
And
fortune cookie.
Oh, that's right, and a fortune cookie.
Yeah.
And it's $11.
$11. Yeah.
$11. And one thing that I really love, that, and everyone talks about this, if you talk about this event at all, within the first three or four sentences, somebody talks about the little drive-in takeout area. Everyone, even if they don't use it, everyone loves knowing that that's there.
Uh-huh.
And so you can get it to go, mm-hmm. and you can, I think, starting at 8 in the morning,
right,
you can just drive in and pick it up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of count is there on that part of things?
1,600.
About 1,600.
Oh,
yeah.
That's more. Wow, that's a lot.
That's set up for 1,600.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that is, that's why they start cooking the night before.
They start cooking the night before.
Yeah, cool it off to pack
chicken
it.
Chicken cold.
Right.
Because you didn't want hot chicken with cold potato salad. Because you know something will spoil.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So you have to chill it down before.
Right.
And
so that's the only difference between the service there and the takeout.
Mm-hmm. How many people does it take to put together the meal? How many people work on it?
Well, a lot of the work, especially like for the potato salad, it's done Saturday.
Mm-hmm. And the event, of course, is on Sunday.
Yeah.
Is it always the second Sunday of July?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And we always used to specify, you know, what type of potato,
mm-hmm.
what type of mayonnaise.
Mm-hmm.
And
I got the ingredients.
Oh, you
here.
Do? You have? Oh,
yeah.
Oh, good. Look, you have all this.
I asked Jelaine, and she gave me the ingredients. The potatoes are usually Yukon Golds, and it's white onions, celery, pickle relish, boiled eggs, vinegar, sugar, salt, and some paprika. And all of this is hand cut. Yeah. And so they're very busy on Saturday.
And so for 4,000 people, that's a lot of potato salad.
Yeah.
And then what's the secret to the teriyaki? Can you tell?
In the sauce? Basically, there's no secret to it. You know, it's just a matter of, because it's always soy sauce, sake, sugar, garlic.
That's it.
It's just a matter of
proportions.
Yes. Proportions, because right. People also praise the teriyaki. They say, this one is real teriyaki.
Yeah. Early on, you know, Kikoma wanted to buy our sauce.
Really?
But they developed their own.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yeah, you know, the people that were doing it beforehand, they didn't want to give the secret away.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, teriyaki. Yeah. It's not a secret, but when it's done well, it's really, really good.
And then even like the salad, we're doing potato salad. And then at one point, somebody says, gee, why don't you try regular green salad?
Oh, yes.
So we tried it for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Did not
it
work.
It was not what the people wanted.
No.
Said you can always do this at home.
Exactly,
but
yes.
You don't always make potato salad.
Right, and it just, and plus it's potentially a very hot day. Mm-hmm. And so that's always a problem with green salad. And it falls off the plate when you're eating outside. So no, I think it's perfect, mm-hmm. just like it is. But there's also more than, you know, people go. Oh. Some people go for the chicken teriyaki. Some people go, and I forget the name.
The age sushi?
Yes.
Yes. Fried tofu and the mixed rice is stuffed into it?
No. What? That's the wrong name. I mean, that's the wrong thing. The beans.
The cake. Imagawa yaki.
It's imagawa yaki. That's right.
Yes.
So many people go. And you see people leaving with boxes of like a dozen or two. Yeah. So would you describe what those are for people who don't know?
They have these large metal pans.
They're sort of like a popover pan,
and they have these circular areas in them, and they pour the batter inside, then they put the bean mixture inside, and then they turn it over and then put the top batter on it, so it's sealed inside pancake type batter. And then a lot of very careful ladies are watching it as it gets turned over.
Uh-huh. Yes. And they sell thousands of those, I would imagine. Thousands and thousands.
Yeah. And they get sold not only on barbecue day, but we also sell them on the Obon Dance Saturday.
That's a lovely event. I've been to that. Mm-hmm. And I love the... it looks like giant fireflies with the lanterns,
the lanterns hanging over when
the sun goes down.
Right, uh-huh.
That's really a nice event as well. Mm-hmm. And then there's another area. Well, there's the area with the... You have to tell me the name of the bean things again.
The
Amagaya?
Imagawa yaki.
Imagawa yaki. I will remember that. Mm-hmm. Imagawa yaki. There's a couple of other things along that stretch, which is in front of the community center. There's often shave ice.
Yes, and then we have a booth for kushiyaki, which is like a meat on a stick with vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the sushi, as I was describing before, and baked goods and sake and wine coolers. And we added teriyaki burgers last year.
Oh, you did?
Yes. It was kind of a nice break
uh-huh.
for the chicken.
Uh-huh. And then it seems like there's a little bit of a bake sale.
Yes.
Where seems to often be butter mochi. Be on the lookout for butter mochi. It's a very good thing.
Yeah, that often sells out.
I've heard. Yeah, you have to get there early for the butter mochi. And just little things. It seems like whatever someone feels like making, they make these wonderful little things.
Uh-huh.
I swear one year there was Rice Krispie treats. I swear there was. And, you know, that's a big secret with... people in the food world around here, everyone loves Rice Krispie treats. We're going to take just a real quick little musical break here on Mouthful, and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the Inmonchi Temple itself. Here we are. Just a little bit of music. Sometimes that happens. And you know why that happens sometimes? Because this is not an automated station. This is a station with humans pulling all of the levers, which is a great thing and something that's, you know, on one hand disappearing, but also maybe coming back. I was driving back from my hula class yesterday. I was on Fulton, and right there by the park, I think it's by the skate park, there were signs that said amateur radio, and I just looked in, and there were all these cars. I thought, cool, you know, humans just love radio, and I'd like to see us taken over again. Anyway, that's a little side thing. We're talking about Inmanchi Temple. We are here with, I still have to look at my notes to get your name exactly right, Reverend Carol Himaka and Martin Shimizu.
Okay.
Shimizu, thank you. Martin, you've been with the temple since its founding, and you've been there 15 years, Carol?
Yeah, coming up to, yeah.
15 years. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the temple itself. What was the, and the temple's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Was that the first structure to go in there? The first building?
Well, that building was one wing of the Manchurian Railway exhibit at the Chicago World's Fair in 1931. And we got one wing.
Oh, wow.
And the bishop at the time knew that the people here wanted a temple.
Mm-hmm.
Well, building anyway. And they had Japanese carpenters dismantle that part of it, shipped it by rail, and reconstructed it at the site in Sebastopol. And it had no nails at that time.
No nails, just no. Like the tongue and groove.
Tongue and groove.
Exactly. Oh, interesting. Yeah. I love buildings like that. Mm-hmm. It's such a marvel of craftsmanship when it's done that way.
I had a visit from a woman who runs a museum in Chicago, and she said she came all the way out here to look at this because she says it's the only existing building from that World's Fair.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's a very unique building. Mm-hmm. It has a mixture of Chinese and Japanese decoration inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's one of a kind.
What a treasure to have here in Sonoma County. Mm-hmm. And what takes place in the temple?
It is our service hall, mm-hmm, for our religious services. Mm-hmm. So the religious services are held there.
Uh-huh. And it's, mm-hmm, the tradition, it's Buddhism.
Yes, right? it's a Japanese Mahayana Pure Land Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when are the services held?
Sundays.
Oh, okay, Sundays.
Sundays at 10:30, uh-huh, we have our services.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how long does our service last?
I don't talk long, so it's about 11, about 40 minutes.
Oh, about 40 minutes. That isn't very long. and then next to it is, I think, next to it is the community.
Mm-hmm.
That's the right name, the community center building.
Right, mm-hmm, the Memorial Hall.
Memorial Hall. When did that go in?
In the 60s, right?
It was completed in 1954.
Oh, 50s.
It was built in 53 and 54.
Mm-hmm. So that was, if I've got my history right, you were coming out of a difficult period then.
Well, it was right after World War II.
Exactly. Yeah. And the temple, the property, was at risk, mm-hmm, during the war.
Yes.
I think someone made a documentary film about
that
fairly recently.
Yes.
I know that you can see that up on the website.
There was an incident where someone did try to burn it down. And so what came out in the DVD was the story about this group of young people from the Christian church up the street who decided that was wrong, and so they came down to do a night watch to make sure that, uh-huh, no harm would come to the building. And so part of that DVD is a dedication to telling that story.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And did they do that for an extended period? I mean, I think
it was a couple weeks.
Yeah. And then the whoever was threatening,
right,
it just sort of,
mm-hmm, well, generally the community was very supportive of the Japanese. It was just, mm-hmm, a strange person,
yeah,
who threw that in there.
Yeah. Yeah. One person can,
yeah,
mess things up.
But it was lucky they didn't do much damage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there was some damage?
There's some fire damage that you can still see inside.
Inside the temple?
Yes.
Inside the temple. Oh, how lucky that it didn't, you know, ruin the building.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in the memorial, memorial center. What sort of events? I know you have events throughout the year, some open to the public,
mm-hmm,
some not. So what sort of purposes is the building used for?
Well, once a month we have a senior center gathering. First Saturday of the month they have. It's, mm-hmm, called Enman no Tomo. And so that is one big thing that goes on during the year. And in summertime, we have 2 weeks in which the Taiko group does a Japanese culture class, and they're for 5 days. Two different groups of young children take
Yes.
Take part in that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes, I know that there's someone here at the station who works at that.
Ah.
Who works at that. I saw her. Because Lucas, who's been on this show many times, Lucas went, I guess, the year that he was 8. Mm-hmm. He went to the camp. And it was interesting, learned Japanese. Mm-hmm. Did some drumming, did some art. It really fit a lot in. It's a really great class.
Yeah, then what else? Occasional different other activities go on during there. Yeah.
And then there's the Obon.
The Obon is the week, is the Saturday after the bazaar, the barbecue, I mean.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. The Obon dance is the Saturday after the barbecue.
Oh, my time frame's totally off.
Yeah, and so after the barbecue, from Tuesday through Friday, we have rehearsals.
Right, and anyone can drop in
Right, and it's from 7 to 9, so that you can learn to do the dances. And then on Saturday, we do the Obon Odori, which is the dance.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe that a little bit? First of all, what's its purpose? I love the purpose. I love the stories that I hear about it. So it's not just like you're going out to square dancing like some people do at a community center on the other side of town. It's not just you're going out dancing. There's a lot of meaning to it.
Yeah, it's a... Obon itself is kind of a National Memorial Day in Japan, and people make special arrangements to try to go home and visit home at that time. And so that the dance part was brought over and I think introduced to the in America by one particular minister, and it kind of caught on. And it's old folk dances, basically. And they're kind of like Japanese line dancing, basically. And so they do that. And it goes back to a story, a Buddhist story, about a monk called Moggallana, who had particular skills to meditate and see other worlds. And he said to, he meditated and he was curious about the destiny of his mother, who had passed away. And so he was looking for her, and he did not find her in the places that he thought he would, and he was shocked to find her in the Hell of Hungry Ghosts. Now, the Hell of Hungry Ghosts is a place in which people who are selfish and greedy, and so Moggallana was very surprised to see his mother there, and he went to the Buddha to ask how to get his mother out of this hell. And so the Buddha told him if he practiced what they call Dhanaparamita, which is one of the bodhisattva practices of learning how to give equally and to all, that that would accomplish it. And so he did this, and he meditated again after that, and then he saw that his mother was, yes, indeed, freed from the Hell of Hungry Ghosts and able to be in one of the many levels of heaven. And so the story is that upon seeing this, he jumped up and started to dance. Oh. And so this is the, also Obon is called the Kangie, or the festival of joy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because the joy of heaven. Hell of Hungry Ghosts is a pretty evocative name. What happens there?
The Hell of Hungry Ghosts is for people who are unable to understand that we are all associated and interrelated. And so they're selfish and self-centered. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the six realms of existence, according to Buddhist teachings.
Mm-hmm.
And hell itself is further down below that. Then the Hell of Hungry Ghosts, then the realm of animals, then the realm of humans, then the realm of fighting spirits, then the realm of the devas, the gods. So all of these realms are known to be similarly associated with suffering from birth, aging, illness, and death. And so the idea is not to keep cycling within them, but to get out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what the Buddha's teachings represents, to be able to transcend those.
Mm-hmm. Just the thought of hungry ghosts that, and what it evokes.
They're very vivid descriptions.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing I think of is, well, what if, let's say you were a ghost, and you hadn't, and you were hungry, and we all know what it's like to be so hungry that I have to eat right now to make this hunger go away. And if you're a ghost, you can't satisfy your hunger. So that's just like just those two words together, so evocative.
Right.
And what happens with the hell below, the hungry ghost hell? What's that about?
Oh, there's a hot hell and a cold hell and various different other things. I just don't know the details beyond that. There's 7 or 8 different levels, though. Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Pretty.
People were very imaginative.
Yes. Okay. Should we try to take another little musical break here and see if it works here on A Mouthful? It is A Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. We're talking about the Inmanchi Temple. They're right on the southern edge of downtown Sebastopol. It has been there since 1934. Yes, 1934. Very much a visible part of Sonoma County, of Sebastopol, but not necessarily something everyone knows about in detail. I really recommend, if you've never been to the teriyaki barbecue, go. Just go. It's a wonderful, wonderful event. And the obon is really quite lovely as well. I loved it, and I'm hoping that my schedule will allow me to go this year. Food, of course, is really important to any community center, as it is, you know, really at the heart of being human. So let's talk a little bit about, I know that in the camp, the children's camp, they do some cooking.
Oh, I don't know about that.
They do.
I think most of it is Friday. Right? When the parents come?
Right. Yes.
The children cook some things for the parents.
Yes. And then people bring other things. Yeah. But there was some sort of rice ball or something that they made that was really, I was impressed that they'd done it.
Mochi?
It wasn't mochi.
Oh.
It was something savory, and I think there was seaweed and sesame involved. But I don't remember.
I wasn't there all the time.
Okay.
Just lost my train of thought. Okay. So you grew up there. really well, nearby.
Basically, I was born here in Cotati, but at that time they used to call it Petaluma.
Uh-huh.
And then over the years it changed to Cotati.
Now, were you born at home? Was there a hospital there?
Where?
Where you were born.
I was born at home.
Okay, at home.
It was rural.
Rural, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it was my parents' ranch.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know whether there was a doctor. It was more like a midwife mm-hmm. situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, something we're sort of going back to more now, especially here in Sonoma County.
Yeah.
That's really quite popular, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, because my father was kind of one of the early members of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something we grew with.
Yeah.
You know? And at the time, it was basically the only gathering place mm-hmm. for the Japanese community.
Mm-hmm. And where were your parents born here, or had they come here from Japan?
No, my parents were, my father was born in Hawaii.
Oh, uh-huh.
But he came to the United States when he was a year and a half. It was like 1907, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother was born in Fountain Grove.
Oh, Fountain Grove.
Yeah, you know,
uh-huh. Yes.
You know Fountain Grove.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So she remembers the Baron.
Uh-huh.
Because she played up there when she was a child.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So your dad was born, where was he born, in Hawaii?
My dad was born in Hawaii.
But whereabouts?
Oh, a place called Waipahu.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's just close to, what is it, Pearl City?
Uh-huh, right, yeah. So yeah. That would be
west
Oahu.
Of Honolulu.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But he doesn't remember because he was
only a year and a half. Yeah, it'd be pretty hard.
Yeah.
I know a few people maybe who have memories back that early, or else they have good imaginations.
Yeah. But they came to Sonoma County mm-hmm. around 1920.
Uh-huh.
For a long time, they were down in Dinuba, down in the Fresno area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Les Blank is a filmmaker, and he's been on the show a few times. And one thing he documents people eating a lot. He's gone into the deep Cajun country to make a little documentary. I think it's about 20 minutes long, called Yum Yum Yum. And, you know, there they just have these houses out in the bayou. They're not even houses. They're little shacks, and they're cooking shacks. Everybody goes out and they cook there. And he's documented other communities. And he always says that immigrants, people who move from one place to another that's very different, the last thing they give up or never give up is their food, their traditional foods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they keep, wherever they travel, they keep their traditional ways of eating. And I know that when I've traveled, Japanese cuisine just is so important. If you, like, in Germany, they always, you go to breakfast if you're in a hotel, you go to breakfast. And there's the European-style breakfast. There's also a little area for American breakfast and Japanese breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And I traveled quite a bit for a while in Malaysia. And that was the same as well. And I became very... I was never at the American breakfast. I was always at the Japanese breakfast. I love Japanese breakfast. It's very different, at least what I've seen of it, and it's not in the context of someone's home, certainly. Could we talk about that a little bit? Because you just seem to eat, I mean, there's pickles, and there's a lot of savory foods.
Mm-hmm.
It seems maybe some soup, different little things, maybe with some pork and some seaweed. But it seems very diverse, and it seems like something that takes a lot of preparation. You don't just scramble a couple eggs.
Yeah, a lot of time there's so much preparation beforehand.
Like the night before, the day before,
right.
While you're preparing other meals or getting ready. So what is a typical Japanese breakfast? Was I seeing something representative when I was in these places?
Well, I'm not really accustomed to what you would call a Japanese breakfast.
Uh-huh, okay.
Because I know when we went on a trip to Japan, they had you know, a Japanese section and a regular American side. And we always ate what we're accustomed.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of times it's like they have miso soup.
Mm-hmm.
And
some kind of fish.
Yeah, some kind of fish. And that's something you don't see very often in American breakfast. You don't see fish very often. Yeah.
And then rice and then some pickles, usually.
It, there isn't really that much, you know. But apparently it's enough to satisfy your breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
So in the places where I've been, they're just offering a big array for people to choose from.
Because I'm more into hash browns and, and sausage. You know,
I do love hash browns. I can say absolutely.
Yeah.
Potatoes are wonderful things.
Yeah, because we were basically raised here,
right?
You know,
with more of an American style diet.
And being my mother was born here, that was her style too.
Uh-huh.
She didn't really do much Japanese cooking.
No.
But at the time, my grandmother was still with us, and she did a lot of the cooking. And even her cooking wasn't quite what you would call basic Japanese cooking, you know. But I guess the main thing is there's always rice there.
Always rice, yes, yeah. Just like in Hawaii, always rice.
And there's always some pickles, you know.
I think that's one of the things I find so appealing was the pickles wake me up.
Yeah, and then there'd be some, in fact, there'd be more vegetable than meats, you know. There was hardly any meats in a Japanese diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just little bits. Mm-hmm.
Maybe more fish than meat, really.
Carol, let's talk a little bit about you coming to Sonoma County. Or maybe you were here already, but came to the temple not quite 15 years ago. What's the path that brought you there?
I was born and raised in San Diego.
Oh.
Yes, and after going through school, and my first assignment was in Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took a leave of absence, went back to school, and then from there, the bishop asked me to take care of the Department of Buddhist Education for a while at the national headquarters in San Francisco. So I did that for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I worked with the Enmonji people to come over here and become their head minister.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been here since then.
And what's the process to becoming... I mean, if that's even a fair question. But... I mean, I know a little bit about, say, going to seminary school to become a priest. Don't know about the process in Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. Well, in our particular denomination, there's part of it that's hereditary, meaning that if the temple family usually owns the temple, own the property, and the eldest son takes over the father's position as head temple minister. And so that's usually the way things are in Japan. In the United States, we have a seminary, and it's a postgraduate seminary, and after you finish that, then you go to Japan for ordination, and then you return and you get assigned according to the national headquarters, who is associated directly to the Mother Temple in Kyoto.
Interesting. Were you pleased to find yourself? Are you pleased to find yourself in Sonoma County?
I love Sonoma County.
Oh, good. Yeah.
It's very similar to San Diego to me, as far as I can tell.
Where were you born in San Diego?
By Mission Bay.
By Mission Bay. Yeah. I was born in San Diego.
Oh.
left there very, very early.
Oh.
But yeah, I was born there. My oldest daughter was born there, so I know San Diego fairly well. So it's just like Sonoma County, it has changed a lot.
Yeah.
And you grew up there?
Yes.
Was there much of a Japanese community there in San Diego?
In comparison to some other areas, wasn't really well organized. The pre-war, there was an identifiable Japanese community in the fact that they lived together. But after the war, they kind of scattered, and they did not create another Japantown type of community. And so the associations with the Buddhist temple was probably the most contact that they had with each other.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but for my own family, we did not live in the area where the other, the Japanese families had mm-hmm. settled. So I was kind of outlander in that mm-hmm. way.
Yeah. Now, I know that there's a big farm down there. I'm trying to remember. I'm not sure if it was Chino Ranch. They got sort of on the map. Their history goes back many, many decades, but they really got put on the map with the whole California cuisine movement in the 70s because Alice Waters at Chez Panisse began buying a lot of things from them. There's this famous story. She was with the writer Ruth Reichel, and they had gone down and gotten two flats of strawberries. And this was at a time when there were very, very few farmers markets. Mm-hmm. Strawberries were still the cardboard variety. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they were flying back. This is when I think PSA was still in there. It was still around. And the aromas of these strawberries filled the plane, and everybody was coming up asking if they could have some. And that led eventually, well, I don't know if it led, but there was a very extensive profile of the farm in The New Yorker that talked a lot about what happened to the family during World War II as well and losing their land. And But they came back pretty strongly with the farm. But I imagine the repercussions or just the effect of the camps and people losing their land, we still see there's still people around who were affected.
Oh, yeah. I think it left a very deep emotional scar.
Absolutely. And do we have people in Manji Temple that...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Everyone, right? Martin went.
You went?
To camp, yes.
I was... I think when I went to camp, I was 11 and a half in that, because it was 42.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it's, to us, we were kids, camp was something else, because we didn't suffer like some of the older people.
Right.
You know, we didn't lose anything compared to them.
And you got to play a lot probably with all the other kids.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's different when you're a child.
Sure,
rather than
absolutely.
Because, you know, we had people that were just getting started in their business or farming or just out of school, trying to find a job, and all of a sudden that's all gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a kid, it doesn't make any difference. You know, you do what you do.
Yeah, as long as you feel safe. Yeah. You're well-fed, and you have kids to play with.
Yeah, because I think we left... I was in the sixth grade at Penn Grove School.
Oh, okay.
And we had a principal. Her name was Mrs. Wineland, and she was very nice. And when the war started, she says, "These are not your enemy people." You know, and that set the tone pretty much for most of the kids at school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think even here in Sonoma County, in Petaluma, most of the people were in the poultry business.
Yes.
Raising it for chicken for eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Sebastopol was all apple orchards.
Mm-hmm.
Santa Rosa, there were some businesses. And there were some people further out that did hops.
Mm-hmm.
And... I don't think anybody lost their property here.
Oh, really? That's really good to know.
You know, and I remember there were some people within the community that looked after these properties.
Mm-hmm.
They were, they were former friends. They were
neighbors, yeah.
Neighbors. And in our place, the people that ran the feed store that we bought feed for the chickens, they found us a tenant to take care of the place while we were gone.
Oh, that's great. You know? That's really good to know that that's what happens
and then,
here.
You know, a lot of places, whoever took over the property as tenants, basically, they all made money during the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were very happy.
And they took good care of things.
And then the people came back, and the property was still there and still producing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was pretty good.
Well, that's good.
At that point.
Uh-huh.
I think the only ones that really lost were young people that didn't have a job
The people just getting started with their lives.
Uh-huh. And there was a few people that were like migrant farmers. They had no place to go. But otherwise, anyone that had property, they got back to their property.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Let's take one more quick little musical interlude, and we're going to come back and talk, wrap up with more details about the upcoming barbecue. It is Mouthful. We have been talking about Inmanji Temple in Sebastopol in their upcoming 57th chicken teriyaki barbecue and bazaar. And we haven't even talked about the bazaar part yet or the entertainment. And if I have it right, there's also tours of the temple.
Yes.
You do tours and talk about it.
Yes.
How often do those tours take place?
I have a schedule about three times.
Three times throughout the day.
I put a sign up and say what time they will be. And so when I first got there, the temple was just closed up, and I thought it was a loss of an opportunity to introduce people to the temple, and so I opened it up and proceeded to do a little 10-15 minute talks about the history as well as the building and about Buddhism, and then people would file out, and then another group would come in, so it was very good, I thought.
From the outside, the temple seems very tiny. How many people does it hold?
It doesn't hold very many. Probably at the most 150.
Oh, 100. That's even bigger than I thought. Mm-hmm. I was going to guess about 60 or 70. Mm-hmm. So a little bigger than I thought. Very beautiful. So there'll be tours. And then there's the entertainment stage.
Yes, yes.
And I know that taiko drumming is very much a part of it. If you've never seen taiko drumming, make sure see it. It's wonderful. It's just wonderful. Mm-hmm. And whenever I watch it, I want to do it. You know, it's just really mesmerizing and so physical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very physical. So what else is there? There will be taiko drumming. There's martial art. Will there be martial arts?
Yes. And there's Japanese dance and hula.
Yes, there will be hula. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I will be dancing. But I think I will just be doing one dance with, we'll be doing the ancient style of hula.
And then in the hall, we have the Bonsai Society has an area in which they show off their plants.
Now,
from
do they show
members.
How it's done?
Not so much. Yeah, they just show them. Uh-huh. And then I think Mr. Henry Kaku does some origami?
I don't know whether he's doing origami this year.
Okay.
I think he was trying to get together some camp artifacts.
Oh, okay.
Joey's hoping that there will be some origami. And there's some sort of games as well inside, right?
They're changing some ideas, trying to give more space to something else, because they have some bingo going on. And do they have the dime tops this year?
I think it was a nickel pitch.
A nickel pitch?
I'm not sure.
And then there's a little area to buy, like a little...
handicrafts.
Handicrafts and some, like a white elephant sale sort of thing.
Uh-huh, right.
And then Lance Liu,
who's
been on a Mouthful a couple of times, talking about Lunar New Year and some of the really wild entertaining that he does. He does the most wonderful arranged flowers.
Yes.
Oh,
uh-huh.
And you can go and you can pick out the flowers and he'll arrange them for you. Mm-hmm. I have a line of vases in my house that I've gotten over the years. He just does beautiful, beautiful arrangements. Last year I got one that was in a very, very big fresh bamboo was the was the vase.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those things, they just last there for a week or more. So that's a very nice part of it. And then the other thing, and this I didn't know about until last year, the plant sale.
Oh, yes. Plant sales, yes.
I found, unfortunately, it didn't make it through the winter. I did something wrong for a few days, I guess. But I got a jacaranda.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm coming very, very early in the hopes of getting another jacaranda.
Mm-hmm.
Those beautiful purple flowers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful, wonderful plant.
Mm-hmm.
But the plant sale, is that just members who gather from their garden and plant the starts?
Right, uh-huh, yeah.
There are some things that you can't really find anywhere else.
Right.
I have to tell you, the prices are amazing.
Very, very low.
Very, very low. And it gets picked over fairly quickly, but it's great. You can go early. Mm-hmm. And the doors open at 10?
Yes.
Yeah,
officially at 10.
Yeah.
But people are there for the plants booth sometime by 9:30.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. But one of the things that's great about it is you can go and you can pick out all your plants and you don't have to schlep them around. So just put them in a little box with your name on it and set it aside. And then when you're leaving, you can go and you can pick them up, which I think is really great.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's going to be different this year is parking.
Yes.
So let's explain that to people.
Yes. Before we had parking that was across the street in Elphick.
Sort of, yeah.
We've had to make other arrangements. So one area of parking will be behind the discount alley, which is a little further down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And another area of parking will be behind the Stokes Flooring Company, which is right across the street. So those are the two main differences. Hopefully, the signs will be clear so that people will be able to know where they can go.
Now, is CHP going to be helping with traffic control?
Yes, definitely, especially at this time. Because of the Stokes
people have to cross the street.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's something to know about, even if you can't make it or you have to go somewhere before or after, allow extra time.
Oh, yes.
It takes
a
while to get through that part of Sebastopol.
Yeah, and we have the area inside the temple is, there's handicap parking for inside the temple area grounds.
Right.
And also we encourage people if they can't, drive in and drop off your passengers and then go and park somewhere.
Yes, and if you can carpool, it's really a good idea to carpool.
Right.
And then there's no admission charge to the
admission.
Event. No, you could just come. You could see the entertainment. Just bring lots of dollars so that you can enjoy yourself. What time does it end?
About 5 officially, because then we have our raffle.
Oh, so tell us about the raffle.
The raffle is very interesting because it all depends upon what gets donated.
Uh-huh.
But the general larger prize is, what, 1,000 and 1, then 250?
I forget if there was. Was there a 5?
1,500 and 250.
Oh, so it's actual money.
It's actual cash prize, and then there are a number of items that have been donated.
Uh-huh. And there are people just walking around all day selling raffle tickets.
Just a dollar a ticket.
Dollar a ticket. So, if you're feeling lucky,
yeah.
I used to win raffles all the time. I think I used up my raffle karma because I haven't won in a while. Maybe I'll try it again this year. So at 8 o'clock, you can start picking up You're to go. And how does that, that's behind, so it's off of Alpha, it's on Alphic, just a little driveway, and you actually drive into the property?
The main gate is our second gate. Yeah.
It's your second gate, okay.
Off of Alphic, yeah. And they have it set up so that you can just drive in and like a circle and pick up and then drive back.
And they just come, you get, do you get out of your car? Do they?
No,
come?
You don't need to.
Don't even need to get out of your car.
People will bring it to your window.
And I assume people need cash. Don't try to pay with a credit card.
Or a ticket.
And can you get tickets?
Yes, you can. Get them ahead of time.
Oh, you can. Oh, tell me, how do people do that?
Well, there are members who have the tickets.
Yeah, most members have tickets.
Members have tickets. Okay. Yeah.
I have some at the temple.
So you can go by the temple. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. What about website?
We have a very poor little tiny website that I try to keep up, but try to keep all of the main activities on there. So,
it's just contact information, phone number, all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
And if you, I know that if you just Google Enmanchi plus Sebastopol, you go right to it.
Yes.
It's Enmanji, Enmanchi. And so, again, this is happening on July 10th. 8 to 10, 8 in the morning to pick up to go. 10 o'clock officially opening. Get there maybe a few minutes early for the plant sale. If you eat any time after about 10:30 or 11, you will stand in line for your teriyaki. And I had always had a rule: I don't stand in line for food. Partly because I've been preparing, I've been on the other end of that for too long. But you know, the line at the Enmanchi Temple is different.
They try to make it move better.
It moves, not just does it move really fast, and it does. Talk to people you're standing at. You find out you know somebody that you didn't realize you knew. You make friends. Mm-hmm. You find out where people are from. So it's actually a pretty fun line to be in. And you do sell beer and wine.
Yes.
Sake too? Sake, I thought so.
With the dinner is a choice of coffee, tea, or milk.
That's right. That's right, because I always get tea. And one thing that you put up shade cloth.
Yes.
It's still a good idea if it's really hot. Be prepared. I like to bring a parasol because I like parasols.
Right.
But the shade cloth disperses some of that direct sun, but if it is going to be hot, you definitely want to be prepared, especially if you're going to linger, and you should linger for the entertainment. I know that the hula dancing takes place at 11 o'clock for just 20 minutes, and if I have it right, I think there's going to be the shark dance will be performed. A member of the Taiko drumming, and it's your son who teaches Taiko.
Yes.
Yes. Well, a member named Wendy.
Oh, yeah. Simone?
Yes. Yes, Wendy Simone. Wendy is involved in the shark dance.
Ooh.
And it's a dance that my Kumu actually wrote herself. And the dance, I don't do this dance. I haven't been in the halal long enough. They turn into sharks on stage.
Wow.
The way that they move is stunning. It's one of the most stunning dances of any kind I've ever seen. You suddenly see them moving, and there's a stage full of sharks. So it's really quite, and I'm sure being there at the temple, and Wendy being, I'm pretty sure that they'll be doing that. So that's one reason to go really early. And on that note, hey, we're out of time. It's been swell. We're taking next week off because of the holiday, so meet me back here July 10th, the same day as the barbecue. It's Michelle, Anna, Jordan on Mouthful.
To the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat. We've got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said. To the Lord, let praise
Mouthful
be.
Is produced by Michelle, Anna, Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too, and he'll sing.
To the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat. We got some beans and some good corn.
just say to the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some flip cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans.